We don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time.
All right. What's up, baddies?
What's up, baddies?
Actually, we like to take our clothes off.
I was about to say, it is more fun with your clothes off.
Actually, a fun fact about me before we cheers. I love to be naked.
She's always naked. Today we had a dog birthday party in her backyard and she had no clothes on.
We're like singing happy birthday.
Her boyfriend came out. He's like, Madison, you're naked.
Put a shirt on. I'm like,
ah. Cheers to episode 31.
I'm sorry, but the girlies who get it. Like, being naked is a free feeling. Like, yeah. You just feel empowered.
I guess, like, for me, I've just never met someone that is so okay with being naked in front of everyone.
Like, I know, it's pretty bad.
No, like, I like to be naked when I'm alone. And to give you guys some context here, when me and Madison used to live together, this is a funny story, actually. So, like, I'm used to it because I've known this bitch for nearly my whole life. And this is the most clothes I've ever seen her wear. You literally know what I mean? But we had, like, a roommate change 1 year. And so we got two new roommates that we didn't know.
Brand new girls. Never met these girls.
And Madison's morning ritual was to go do naked yoga in the yard. Or just walk around naked, like, because she lived with me and her sister.
Yeah.
So it was normal. It's not like she's, but like these two random girls move in and
I didn't change for nobody.
No, and the look on one of these girls' faces one night when she was like, is she? They were clearly just like
bamboozled.
They didn't know if they should look, if they should look naked? Away.
I'm in the backyard.
Yeah. Like. In downward dog.
Literally. I mean, in my defense, one of those girls turned out to be a very close friend of mine. The other one couldn't fucking stand to look in my direction.
Well, you guys just clashed.
There's two types of people in this world, the naked girlies and the non-naked girlies. Yeah,
well, I'm a non-naked girly.
I do have some modesty, like, in front of men. Obviously, if there was, like, dudes around that I don't know.
Well,
I'm just gonna, like, pull my top out. Like, pull my tits
pull your
out,
dick out.
Pull my top out. Like, I have, obviously, I didn't used to. Like, as a kid, like, my friends, like, I'm talking a young kid, like, six, 7. My friend's parents would be like, Madison, you need to put clothes on.
Oh, so you've always been this
way. Oh, yeah. Like, my friend's dad would be like, you cannot run around my house naked.
Like, you have
titties. This is a problem. Put a fucking shirt on.
That's wild.
I was like a kid. I don't know. I'm, like, rolling in the dirt. Yeah. I don't care.
That's funny.
Now, looking back, like, if I had kids and their friends were over and their friends were running around naked, I'd probably be like, okay, Matilda, you need to put a fucking shirt on. But I don't know. It's just, it is who I is.
Yeah, I think my mom was always very modest growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just wasn't a normal thing in our households.
My mother was not modest.
Yeah. Well, we are who we...
And my mom's tits were always out.
We are a product of our own environment, which actually, maybe we should just kick off the podcast here because that kind of leads us into one of our first topics.
Obviously, a topic kind of seems to have become our niche on this podcast is relationships, trauma, healing from trauma, how that trauma kind of manifests itself in your current relationships. And so something we wanted to touch a little bit more on because we got a lot of feedback on it was attachment styles, anxious, avoidant, and how those styles can kind of coexist in peace and how you can still have a good relationship with different attachment styles. And the truth about it is, if you struggle with an anxious or avoidant attachment style, something a lot of people don't know is that it's directly correlated to your early childhood experiences with your caretakers. Being exposed to family dysfunction and unhealthy relationships during our formative years can cause permanent damage to how we view our future relationships. And that goes for both the relationships that we have with our parents and the relationships that we witness our parents have. These wounds often subconsciously manifest in our current relationships as things like anxiety, reactive tempers, emotional unavailability, and emotional avoidance. So if you notice these problems arising in your current relationships, understand that although it is your responsibility to take ownership and heal from your trauma, it's not your fault that that trauma exists. For example, the first memory that I have of my parents was them throwing plates at each other in the kitchen and screaming. And ironically enough, that manifested into my first relationship being with somebody who screamed and threw things and hit me. So there you go.
And I think that was so well put because it's so hard sometimes to recognize that the behaviors that we have as adults actually stem from our unhealed childhood trauma. And being able to keep in mind that just because we have these triggers doesn't mean that we're a lost cause. Like, these things can be healed and it's not your fault.
Well, and that's why sometimes you feel crazy. You're triggered and shit's happening and you feel like there's something wrong with you. Like, why am I so fucked up? Or why do I have these thoughts? And you don't correlate the fact that, holy shit, that happened when I was a baby, when I was literally learning what the world was and how the world turned. This is what I learned was okay.
You can develop an anxious attachment style by being simply a child left at home for a little little bit too long. Your mom goes to the grocery store. She doesn't come back at the time that she says. And it embeds a fear within you for the rest of your life.
Of loss.
Subconsciously. Yeah. Like, you might not even know that that was what the initial trigger was. That is now within you forever. And you don't even realize that that was the moment that started the anxious attachment style pattern within your life.
Well, and let's be honest. For most of us, it's a hell of a lot worse than our mom, like, not coming back from the grocery store. So when you put it like that, that it could be as simple as something like that, starting that attachment style, when you think of like how serious some of the bad shit that's happened in your childhood was, you're like, okay, no wonder I'm so fucked up.
Everyone that listens to this podcast knows that I struggle with an anxious attachment style. I used to be avoidant, which is the craziest part, but I've always had, like, I go back and forth. It kind of depends on the situation, but as I've gotten older and kind of become more of myself, I feel like I was avoidant because I was anxious. It was almost like avoiding the anxiety, but when I healed my avoidant attachment style, somehow I like boomeranged.
Awakened this fucking...
catapulted to the other side of the spectrum where now I'm like very anxiously attached. And so obviously I'm into self-help books, or I go through phases where I'm like, this self-help book is going to fix me. Or I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, they're bullshit. When you're really down bad, I do recommend anyone listening, like, find a self-help book that kind of relates to your situation. They do help.
Yeah. Put it on Audible. Like,
yeah, just listen to it while you're falling asleep, while you're cooking, whatever. That's what I do.
Or bad therapy.
Yeah. Like, or bad therapy. You know. That too. Cause we just regurgitate everything we hear on here. Anyway, right?
Literally.
There's a book that I've recently been reading in hopes to heal my anxious attachment style. And it's called Attached. And something that was really interesting, it kind of broke down the anxious and avoidant attachment styles and secure and how they're formed early on in your developmental years. So for an anxiously attached person, it means that your parents were very inconsistent. For someone that's avoidantly attached, your parents were not there for you emotionally, were more likely not going to be there for you than they were there for you. Whereas someone that's anxiously attached was never able to rely on their parents to be there because one day they were and one day they weren't. And so it was very confusing and it creates this like need for attachment. Whereas an avoidant person, because their parents were not there, they learned to be very hyper independent and not need or crave it because they were never getting it anyways. So you develop this very early on, and a secure attachment is formed when your parents are consistently there for you.
Like a regular parent.
Emotionally. Yeah. And while these attachment styles can be formed early, early on in your childhood, I think that these things can be triggered and expanded on as you grow and your later life experiences with your family, with your friends, with relationships. Like, I think every relationship we go through past that, once something is kind of set inside of you, like once you have that initial fear or struggle, anything after that just kind of stacks on top of it. So I think for somebody that's anxiously attached or somebody that's avoidantly attached, having one bad relationship that kind of triggers that kind of sends you into a spiral of, well, now I'm even more avoidant, or now I feel even more anxious, and now this is how I'm going to react in any relationship or any friendship or in any scenario, because I'm immediately assuming the worst because I don't feel safe.
And it takes a long time to heal and train yourself out of those habits. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as avoidance go, avoidant parents are usually, they don't give you a safe space to feel your emotions. Being emotional is not ever looked at as a good thing. It's almost like stonewalling, shutting down. And so that's what you learn as an adult, that that's the only way to protect yourself. And like, to learn how to change that when it is so deep rooted in the person you are, and not only learn how to change it for yourself, but I think the hardest part for me and a lot of people that have dealt with these issues in their early developmental years is becoming an adult and still having to deal with your parents and love your parents, but realizing that the relationship and the way they act is toxic, and trying to find a line and a boundary of how can you keep them in your life? How can you still love them without letting their trauma and their attachment style and whatever they instilled in you when you were a child continue to affect you as an adult?
Something that I think a lot of people that were raised in maybe not the healthiest family home life with their parents, not to say that your parents are always at fault, because at the end of the day, we're all people and we're all human and we're all trying to figure this out.
We're all just learning
at the same time. Like, just because they've been around longer doesn't mean they have all the answers. Like, that's how I've made peace with it. Like, they're people too. But I remember, and I think people can relate to this, seeing things that I didn't like in my parents and saying to myself, like, I'm never going to be like that. Yeah. But what's funny is you end up learning just from being around it. Like, you're a sponge when you're a child. So the things that you witness and experience, as much as you may hate it and disagree with it, you kind of in a way embody that as you get older. And it's really difficult to, like you said, untrain yourself or teach yourself a new way of being. You have to like consciously think of it, because
every day these
things just become like second nature, because it's what you're used to experiencing. It's the type of arguing you're used to being involved in. It's the type of
communicating,
like loving, caring, apologizing.
How do you show love?
Taking accountability.
How do you apologize?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think as much as, you know, I was a very self-aware 12-year-old looking at some of the things that I was seeing around me, being like, I never want to be like that. I never want to embody that. And then getting older and having to look myself in the mirror one day and be like, wow.
Look at you.
You actually-
You just like your mama.
Are just a goddamn product of your environment, aren't you? And what are you going to do to fix that?
Well, and like, how could you not be, right? You would be naive to think that you just were stronger than the environment that you grew up in and that none of that was going to have any effect on you.
Yeah.
By the time that you are old enough to start making your own emotional decisions,
you're already developed.
You're done for.
Yeah.
And you have to unlearn it. You have to fix it. And I have to give, maybe it's just my friend group, but I was going to say our generation, some credit. Because I hear some of the stories about the people's parents in my life and I'm like, good Lord, great balls of fire. What is going on? Like, it seems to be that everybody has some sort of trauma or origin story, or their parents were just fucked up. And it seems like us as a generation are handling it pretty fucking well.
Yeah.
Like, we are wanting to be different. We are wanting to change. We are wanting to go to therapy. I notice that there's a lot less like alcoholism in our generation. Maybe we're just not 50 yet and we haven't had time to like rot enough. I don't know. But I have noticed that some of my friends who have it worse are a lot better than you would expect them to be.
I think the hardest part about having a damaged attachment style, whether it's anxious or avoidant or fearful avoidant, or like, I think there's like a couple other ones, is trying to formulate romantic relationships as an adult with these inner wounds. And this is the best relationship advice that I would give to anybody that's currently involved in an anxious and avoidant relationship. When you're the anxiously attached person, you tend to be more codependent. And when you're the avoidant, you tend to be more independent. In order for any relationship to work, you have to be able to find a balance somewhere in the middle. And there's actually a term for this. Psychologists refer to this as interdependence. Interdependence is where two people are able to find a balance between being independent and depending on another person. In order to successfully achieve this in a relationship, it requires a mutual respect for both having boundaries and a healthy reliance on one another. Because when you're in a relationship, it's so important to maintain being an individual while also having the courage to be vulnerable. To give love, we must love ourselves, which is a personal journey. And to receive love, we must admit that we need it from another person, which is a shared journey.
Well, and I think that is the most important thing for people that are currently in a relationship like that to understand, is just because somebody is different than you doesn't mean that you aren't supposed to be together or you can't be with them. Because I think there's a lot of turmoil that arises when people on far ends of the spectrum don't understand each other, but you can come to a common ground. You can agree on things. You can get to a place where you're healthy and happy. You just have to communicate and respect each other's boundaries, but also be willing to be vulnerable. I think that's the biggest part. Like, you have to communicate that.
I think the key to being in a healthy relationship when you are dealing with some broken attachment styles is communicating your needs and then respecting the other person's needs. Like, obviously, as an anxiously attached person, I might need more than what an avoidant wants to give me. And in some people's minds, I might be crossing their boundaries when they're like, I need space, I need this, I need that. If they need space, they can communicate that to me. Whereas if I need more, I can communicate that to them. And ultimately, like, if you can't find a common ground with that, it just, one of the people in that relationship is not pulling their weight, because obviously there's extreme scenarios, but I do believe that everything, if that's your only problem, is like you need space and you need more attention, like the person that needs space could give a little bit more effort and you could give a little bit more space. Because coming from an anxiously attached person, when they need space, if it's communicated to me that they need space or that they're doing something and that they're going to be gone and they don't just disappear,
you're okay with that.
That communication helps soothe me. Whereas if they were to communicate that they needed space, then I would be able to soothe them, because if they were able to tell me, hey, I need this, that or the other,
you wouldn't be jumping down their throat, blowing them up.
Yeah. And then I wouldn't be stressing them out. And then they're stressed because I'm stressing them out because they're stressed.
And then it becomes toxic.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to give to get. And obviously we're speaking in terms of a healthy love-filled relationship.
Yeah, like someone that's gonna want to put forth the effort to be in a relationship with you. Because obviously, like, I think sometimes we get confused in relationships where a guy's not talking to us and we're like, oh, they're just avoidant. No, maybe they just don't like you that
much.
Maybe
they're just an ass.
Maybe they're just not interested. Maybe they just don't care.
Yeah.
Because honestly, you could be with an avoidant person that also is a piece of shit, because if they're a piece of shit, they're not gonna care if they're hurting your feelings or if they're affecting you in a negative way.
Right, they don't care. They're not gonna give.
Yeah, like someone that cares cares about you is going to care if they're making you feel that way. And I think just because you have an unhealed attachment style, not saying that you should leave it like that. Like, obviously you should try to heal that. And I know it's not easy, but it doesn't mean that you can't be in a relationship. It doesn't mean that every relationship you're in has to suffer.
Right.
You just have to learn to communicate your needs and have empathy for your partner's needs and what they want and desire and need to feel safe and secure.
Well, and that's absolutely it. And also understanding the difference between a healthy relationship with two different attachment styles where a common ground can be found and understanding a toxic relationship with someone who isn't interested in finding common ground.
And there's so many levels to this shit because I also feel like someone could be a good person and they could want to try, but if they are not doing it the right way, or if they're saying that they're going to put more effort in, or they're saying that they're going to try to help you feel better about a certain thing, but ultimately they don't.
It's, the actions aren't there. It's all words.
Yeah. It's like, maybe it's not their fault. Maybe that's the best that they can do. I saw something once where it was a really tall glass of water filled to the brim. And then there was a really short glass. You're the tall glass of water filled to the brim and you're pouring into the short glass. It just starts overflowing all over the place because you have so much to give. And this person is like, holy shit.
There's no room.
But in the reverse, the empty glass is the tall glass and the full glass is the short glass. And they've poured every last drop of what they have into your glass and you're still only halfway full.
Absolutely.
So sometimes you just need to self-reflect and take a step back. And that's the hard thing to do when you really want something, but you need to be able to say, I need more, or this is not good enough for me. Like, it's okay for someone to be a good person and have good intentions for you and they still not be the right person for you.
I've just said that to a friend who's going through a breakup. Said, I'm not going to tell you he's a bad guy because he's not, but he's certainly not the right guy. There's so many things that aren't there for you. There's just red flags of non-compatibility. That doesn't mean that either of you are bad people. Now, I'm not saying there aren't guys out there who are not, they are bad people and they're fucking don't deserve to be with anyone. But we're talking in terms of just like regular relationships that just aren't working. And it's the most cliche saying, but if he wanted to, he would. If something was broken in a relationship and a man loved you, he would fix it. If a man loves you and wants to be with you, he's going to fix the problem. He's going to make it right. If a man doesn't care and he's checked out, he's probably not going to. And that's when you have to make the decision to leave, to know that it's not worth it to you to sacrifice your well-being and your dignity to be with somebody who's not really all in for you. Because the truth of it is, the person that you end up with is the person that your children are going to end up with. So if it's not somebody who's treating you right and showing you empathy and things that your children deserve to see, it's probably not somebody you should be marrying or having kids with.
So on the topic of relationship problems...
Us? No.
We were recently just discussing between the two of us what our thoughts were on the worldwide issue that seems to plague us all. And that is men liking and following women on social media when they're in a relationship. And what our thoughts were on that. Madison, what are your thoughts on this?
I love this topic because I've been on both sides of the spectrum where I like was okay with it or okay with it. And I made excuses for it. And now in a world where that would never exist, understanding how truly disrespectful it is, not only disrespectful, but it is embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
When you are fucking scrolling on Instagram and you see your man's name under every naked, half-naked woman's picture, and you know everybody else can see that too, just the level of shame and embarrassment you feel that not only does your man participate in that kind of stuff, but he is enthusiastic about being a part of it.
Blasting his name right front center no for
shame.
Everyone to
he
see.
He has no shame about...
It's embarrassing.
You seeing it, his mom seeing it, his cousin seeing it.
His friends. Your friends.
And men love to make an excuse. I don't know them. They don't know me.
Or no, it's like, I don't even think about what I'm doing when I'm scrolling. What the fuck are you talking about,
bro? It's just muscle memory. Okay, well, that's a bad fucking muscle memory.
Muscle memorize how to fucking put your finger the fuck down.
Literally. And that's just an excuse, right? Because men are not...
100%. It's an excuse because nobody is that mindless. Like, yes, social media is mindless. Every single thing that we do in life has a little bit of intention behind it.
Absolutely.
Whenever I've liked a photo ever in my entire life, I don't just do like scroll and like shit. Like I'm liking it for a purpose, especially when it's a naked woman. What are you just like, is your finger trained to just double tap on naked women? Then no.
Well, and this isn't an issue the other way around. It's never, why are girls liking all these naked chiseled men?
Because women have respect.
And like, that's embarrassing for me.
It's just screams and reeks of desperation. I think the worst thing as a woman is to be in a relationship with a man, to feel inferior to another woman because you're looking at these women that he likes, that he may fantasize about, which is fine if that's what you like or that's your preference or that's something that, like, you know, you might fantasize about in private.
No shit.
Yeah, you don't need to go fucking blast your name all over social media for the whole world to see. It's embarrassing. It's distasteful. It's fucking rude. And I'd be damned if I ever dated another man again that tried to gaslight me into thinking that that's acceptable. Because yeah, I dated somebody who would, oh my God, the level of gaslighting. And then I would post like a bikini picture because he would be liking all these bikini pictures. So I'm like, oh, well, this is what he likes. And then he'd be like, well, if you can post these pictures, then I can like them.
Oh, and then giving you shit for even posting that? Like, why would you put that on social media?
Yeah, but meanwhile, that's all he likes. Because he knew the reason he was mad that I would post a picture like that is because he knew what his intent was behind liking the photo. So he didn't like the attention that I was getting because he was one of those men.
All the thirsty ass guys liking your picture, thirsty, trying to get your attention.
It's reeking of desperation. Like, I can fucking smell you. Go take a shower.
And let's be for real. Whether you're in a relationship or single, it is still gross to be consistently liking naked women's pictures and following naked women on Instagram.
It's desperate.
Like, go talk to a real girl. It's disgusting. It's okay.
Yeah.
And it's not, let's be realistic, it's not a real life scenario. These women, the majority of these women, are not real women. And God forbid they're liking people in your circles pictures.
Well, I dealt with that shit.
That's
too.
Even more embarrassing.
Yeah, like someone that we know, because it's like people we know will see that. And they're like, personally, as a woman, whenever a guy in a relationship likes a picture that's clearly not intended for him,
yeah,
it gives me the ick. It makes gross. Me immediately want to block him. So I just want every man out there that's listening to this to understand that if you're trying to get at a girl and you're in a relationship, I want you to know that liking her photos and her thirst traps and being desperate and fucking disgusting online is giving her the ick, and she's sending it to her group chat or she's
and making
thinking,
fun of you.
Yeah. And she's thinking that you're a weirdo and has zero respect for you and will most likely never fuck you. So you should just give it up.
I had someone literally today, I'm in a whole ass committed relationship, a guy go like 15 of my pictures. One of them is a collaboration with my boyfriend. It's just a picture of me, the first one. The second one is me and him. And he texts me and he's like, who's this guy? And I was like, don't worry. He's already fucking blocked. Was blocked the second that happened, because that is not the way to get somebody's attention. First off, somebody who's in a relationship. But secondly, like, if you want to talk to somebody, talk to them. Have some
cojones.
Have some self-esteem. Like, yeah. I know it's so easy on social media these days to just...
Or maybe if you go to someone's fucking profile and you see that they have a photo with their man.
Like, have some self-respect.
The last 25 pictures of them and their fucking partner. Go away. Go away.
Take a shower.
Go get in the shower.
My advice to girls who are going through this, though, because obviously that's what we're here for. If a man is doing that consistently and you have brought it to his attention calmly and respectfully that it doesn't make you feel good and he continues to do it, you are not going to change that man. Mm-hmm. That is who he is. That is how he acts. There's nothing you can do to stop him. Walk the fuck away from that man because he has bad intentions and he does not have the morals that you need in a partner.
And do not, for the love of God, let that man gaslight you into thinking that that is acceptable, normal behavior, because they will. And honestly, I think that they fully believe when they're telling you about their delusions that it is okay, but like deep down, they know it's wrong. That's why they're so defensive about it.
And that's why they wouldn't let you see it.
If it really didn't matter to them, they would say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I won't do it again because I care about you and your feelings.
And they actually wouldn't do it again.
But clearly, they care more about liking these photos than they do about how it makes you feel. Fuck that. Get out of that relationship. Go find somebody that respects you. Honestly.
And the bottom line is, a good man is not going to do that to begin with.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a conversation that you're having.
Yeah.
When I was in the beginning of my relationship, we were sitting on the couch together and he was on his phone. We were in a position where I couldn't really see him, but I could kind of see him. He didn't think I was looking. Like, he's completely minding his own business and he's scrolling on Instagram. I see a half naked chick and he clicks on her profile and I was like, sir.
Right in front of you?
Right in front of me. Fucking clicks unfollow.
The audacity.
Clicks the unfollow button.
Your man.
My man.
I love my man.
Because I was like, we were kind of early on. I was like, what is he going to do? Like, is he going to go creep on this fucking chick right in front of me? No, he goes to her profile, clicks unfollow, goes back to his happy old screen and keeps on scrolling. Likes a picture of like Yu-Gi-Oh or some shit. Like, it's never going to be a problem with somebody who respects you and loves you and admires you and would never want to humiliate you in that way.
I actually remember like this really toxic relationship that this whole conversation reminds me of. We would be, you know, in the morning scrolling together. Like, I'd be looking at what he's scrolling on. And like every time a girl would pop up, he would scroll so fast.
Oh, just like
I've never lightning. Seen that man move so quickly. Like, as if I didn't see the naked girl. But like, yeah, he would scroll so fast past it. And I was like, look a little bit more guilty. Just like slightly more guilty.
Right. Like, if you weren't guilty, you wouldn't do that.
For him to then turn around and tell me that, oh, I don't think about it or it means nothing. Like, clearly you are fully aware
with the speed of fucking of your lightning,
weird ass intent behind what you're doing on that app.
Well, and that's
fucking
what
weirdo.
It all comes down to intent and intention behind intent. Mm-hmm. Right there, that's the fucking statement.
Fires in the Bronx and
killed 10 people in the Bronx, and a fire in the Bronx that killed 10 people. And a fire in the Bronx. No, but honestly, the intention behind that type of behavior, it doesn't just end at Instagram. Mm-hmm. That is where it comes to.
No, that's a major red flag, because as though it may seem silly to say, like, you bring it up to your man, like, that's so stupid, it's just Instagram.
They're like, you're dramatic, you're crazy.
It is not just Instagram. It boils down to a moral indifference between the two of you. Like, this man views women as objects. Like, you can be attracted to women and see something that you like and not have to be desperate enough to leave your name behind, because why the fuck else would you like a photo as to not just let the girl know that you like the photo? That's literally what that
you are liking the photo.
That is what the feature is for, is to show somebody,
hey, I like this
that
photo.
You like it.
Nice
I
tits.
Like your boobs.
Yeah.
That is so fucking inappropriate when you have a girlfriend.
And
just FYI, if that wasn't clear.
If you can tell, Allie feels very strongly about this.
Because, bro.
The men that are triggered by this, because there will be, mm-hmm. You're the one we're talking about,
yeah.
Brother, by the way. You're the fucking problem.
Yeah. If you think we're wrong, fuck you.
If you can't look in the mirror with some emotional maturity and say, why would this be a problem?
Yeah.
Even if I'm single, why is this a problem? That this is the way that I'm spreading my attention and spending my time. Then you need to check yourself into the lobotomia and get a full fucking double blast
lobotomy. You know what? Hit us up. Free lobotomies for all the fucking men out there that think we're wrong in this scenario. And you know what I've never understood? Why must you leave a trail behind? Like, you can fantasize and have all these thoughts and like all these things. Like, why do you have to leave a trail?
You want to know why?
Why?
Because they're nasty little snails and they leave a little snail nasty
their
snail
little
trail.
Snail trail.
A little nasty
I think
snail
it's
trail.
Genuinely because they think if they like this photo, this girl's gonna be like,
I genuinely like, don't understand it. Like, when you're in a committed, happy relationship, but maybe that's the point. Maybe these men are not committed and not happy.
Yeah.
They're always looking for something else. And that's something that social media has really done to our society. It's
yeah,
like,
it's fucked.
You find the slightest thing wrong with your relationship and it's booty cheeks in your face. Like, what can I get that's better? What else can I have?
Yeah.
Instead of working on fixing the problem and being content with what you have.
It's that saying that goes like analysis paralysis. Like, when you're provided with too many options, you aren't able to pick anything because there's always another option.
Well, and a lot of this is where insecurity breeds from. But let me just say, being in a relationship where someone does not treat you like that and does not make you feel like that is the most secure, overwhelmingly confidence building, wonderful feeling in the world, where you don't even have to question. Obviously, we're human beings. We find other human beings attractive, but you don't have to question if your man is out there fucking embarrassing you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my little heart.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are plaguing the nation, I need to talk about Gen Alpha and their fucking slang that they've created for themselves.
Gen Alpha. Like, to me, even
who?
That is like, what?
Who? So I work with people that have kids. And their kids have apparently created an entirely new language that, to me, honestly kind of pisses me off because it's so stupid.
And, like, I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are they okay?
So I was learning some of the terms today and I was telling Madison. And watch, we're going to start using these. Like, ironically, we're going to be saying them.
It's hard not to.
It's funny, but, like, watch, it's going to become a thing that we say and I fucking hate it. Skibbity toilet.
She said that to me earlier. I said, skibbity what?
So trust me, I've seen this before and I was always like, what in the fuck am I listening to right now? Skibbity toilet apparently means lame. So like, you can't say that's lame because saying that's lame is lame in their eyes.
It's skibbity toilet?
Yeah, or you could just shorten it to skibbity.
And the funniest thing about this is like, this is real. They actually speak like this.
Real.
They'd be like, you're fucking skibbity
so
right
like,
now.
If you look good, you're mewing.
That's the one I cannot get behind
that
at all.
That one is so stupid. Madison,
mewing?
This is the one that Madison liked. Phantom tax.
Like the phantom tax? Pay the phantom tax?
Yeah, but so phantom tax, which this is so randomly specific. It's like when you steal someone's food.
And you have to pay the phantom tax? And it's also spelled P-H-A-N-O-M.
Like, no, I think it's F-A-N-O-M.
No, I'm pretty sure it's P-H.
No, I'm pretty sure it's F.
Damn, did I just blow that?
Yeah.
No, it is F-A, you're right.
F-A-N-U-M, yeah.
Sorry. It's fucking Gen Alpha, crucify me. Phantom tax.
I love, like, honestly, I'm kind of embarrassed that I knew the exact spelling.
It's because it's Phantom.
It's because I looked it up earlier.
I'm just like, I guess I think as a normal functioning millennial, it'd be like Phantom.
Oh, Gyat.
What the fuck is Gyat?
Gyat means girl, you ass thick. I think.
No, it does not.
It's basically saying
like she got a gyat.
You got a gyat. Like, gyat damn.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, we get mad about this. Like, we have our own crazy shit, like a wagon or like.
Okay, wagon is like unique to you and I. That's independent. I don't think that was ever a thing.
Like a wagon. Or like, yeah. Nobody ever said that.
Like, what is something that we say? I like
YOLO. Hella, YOLO.
Hella cap. Is not cap. Yeah, like you're capping. Yeah. Cap.
Like your cap.
So cap.
No cap.
Cap is something that, how many times are we going to say cap? So there's cap, smack, slap.
Smack my fire. Ass like the drum. Fire. Twerking. I guess that's just a word.
That's a dance.
Twerking. Twerking that yacht. Clout.
Yeah, clout.
Or is like that kind of like a mixture of the generations coming together?
No, clout. I think clout is us because we were the internet generation. You know?
Or like
social media.
We kind of started like the acronyms like LMFAO.
No, YOLO. That was millennials.
Aren't we millennials?
I'm Gen Z. 97 is the cutoff for Gen Z.
God damn, I'm a millennial.
You're a millennial?
I'm born in 97.
You're Gen Z. 97 is the cutoff.
Oh, shit. I don't want to be Gen Z. I want to be a millennial.
I think we're very much on the cusp.
I mean, like, we grew up in the millennial.
Well, I'm 98, you're 97, and it's, like, I feel like I'm half millennial, half Gen Z.
I just can't believe, and, like, maybe it's just weird because we're older now, but, like, if I heard a kid saying, like, skibbity gyat toilet.
I would bring back bullying.
Ohio? That's another one.
Oh, that was the other one. So this is how it was described to me. So Ohio, it's like the way to describe something. But if you're talking about a guy, it's bad. Immediately bad.
I just can't wrap my brain around that. Skibbity Ohio? How did that take off?
I don't know.
It's like the walk to a girl. How did that take off?
Yeah, well, that makes more sense than fucking skibbity toilet.
Skibbity toilet. Gooner. Anyways. I've been hearing that. The gooner. Goon.
Well, that's.
Edge sesh. Catch me in edge sesh.
Edge
gooner.
Sesh. Where have you been?
Haven't you seen those like fucked up reels where it's like a animated AI person and it's like Livy Dunn talking to like baby Gronk and they're talking about like catch me an edge sesh. No, you gooner. Like it's
what
the funniest
is an
shit.
Edge sesh? Madison. You know what honestly needs to be studied is Madison's For You page.
I swear the weirdest, funkiest, funniest shit.
It is so fucking bizarre. Like, it's a part of the internet that not a lot of people, I think, see.
It's not accessed by many. But and the people it reaches, like,
it's
right audience.
For a reason. Yeah. You know, that you spent 3 years curating that.
I'm not going to lie. These videos are like a minute and a half long. And I'm like, wow, my brain is rotting, but I cannot look away.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the longer you watch something, the algorithm's like.
And you
I can
like
just see
this.
Your,
yeah.
I can just see your dumb ass just watching some llama eating grass and then turning into a balloon.
Literally.
Yeah.
I love it. Mm-hmm. This guy pulls up to the drive-thru and he's like, can I order 3 yacht loco moco? I think it's like some type of combination of the alpha generation and the millennial. Oh, excuse me. What are we?
Gen Z.
And the Gen Z generation coming together. I don't know. I'm done fucking talking about it. But you should look it up. It's funny.
So I hope your guys' brains feel as rotted as ours do at this point.
Skibbity toilet, dude.
I love how this podcast just took a straight left turn.
Immediate left, then a right, down to Ohio, gooners and skibbities. I can't stop now. Now you're all fucked. I get like hyperfixation.
I was going to say Madison gets hyperfixated on things and it becomes her whole personality for a month.
For the next 3 weeks, might as well call me Gen Alpha because like I'm fucking done for.
Because she's skibbity toilet.
I'm absolutely skibbity toilet. Going to be mewing around town with my fucking.
With her yacht.
With my yacht. Ah! Yeah. Okay. I'm done now. Hey, cheers to bad therapy. Cheers. Wait, I need a little ukulele.
Episode 31.
Episode 31.
Cheers.